This is Music Magazine, a program of music and commentary presented to both inform and entertain you. Music Magazine will challenge you to enjoy music and information that may well be different from the usual fare. Here now, provocative and unusual music on today's edition of Music Magazine.
The year was 1979. Music critics and fans alike were wondering what had happened to rock music. Some predicted that within the next 5 years, rock and roll would be pronounced dead. Disco was the king of the North American music scene, with such acts as ABBA and the Bee Gees regularly hitting the top 10 on the music charts. And then, another British invasion, this one promising to breathe new life into the music industry. But this wasn't quite what music fans had in mind. This was something new, something different. A new wave of music. And leading this new wave of synthesizer-oriented rock was a young man who personified the new wave ideal. He was born in 1958 as Gary Anthony Webb. He got his start with a punk rock band called Mean Street, which tried to cash in on the success of such artists as the Sex Pistols. But the other members of Mean Street felt that Gary was too creative and asked him to leave. Gary and bassist Paul Gardner formed a new band and began working on their own vision of what rock music should be. A deal was struck with a small record label called Beggar's Banquet, mainly because one of their executives had seen Gary performing with Mean Street. An album was recorded. Beggar's Banquet was expecting punk rock. What they got was something totally different. They initially balked at releasing the album, but Gary was nothing if not persistent. Finally, the record company relented and agreed to release the album. At the same time, Gary began using a new stage name, which better reflected his new musical direction. That name? Gary Numan. In the summer of 1979, his electrobeat single Cars quickly shot to the top of the charts, staying on the top 20 in Canada for over 4 months. At age 20, Gary Numan was the top dog in a completely new field of music. Here he is from the soundtrack to the motion picture Speed, with a slightly updated version of a classic hit song, Cars.
Listen to you, in case you stay home for a day, it's been hard.
The success of Cars and other electronic synthesizer-based music gave new artists a chance to carve out their own niche in a completely new way. It also gave older artists a chance to breathe new life into their careers. And more importantly, it proved that rock wasn't dead. It might never be quite the same again, but it wasn't dead. In a moment, we'll take a look at the influence that Gary Numan had on other artists of the 1980s. You're listening to Music Magazine, and today we're taking a look at a groundbreaking musician who helped rescue rock and roll from that slow death known as disco. Gary Numan had a profound effect on the overall direction of rock music in the late 70s and early 80s. David Bowie admitted that his album Scary Monsters was heavily influenced by Gary's work. Gary worked with many other artists of the era, notably Mick Karn from the band Japan, Roger Taylor from Queen, and Robert Palmer. In 1980, both Numan and Palmer were working on new albums, and began collaborating, each borrowing a little from the other. The album that Palmer was about to release, Clues, featured such well-known singles as Johnny and Mary and Looking for Clues. It also included a song from the album Gary was working on. On Palmer's version of the song, Gary Numan plays keyboards and Paul Gardner plays bass. Palmer brought his own interpretation to this dark song about a future society in which men and women exist only as figments in the imagination of a computer. Here's Robert Palmer with I Dream of Wires.
They called me the spotlight. I was the best I'm worth them all. You raise, you raise.
Not only was Gary Numan writing innovative new music, he was changing how we go to concerts. In 1980, Gary launched an ambitious tour that saw him play Europe, Asia, Australia, and North America, finishing the tour on November 12th at the Max Bell Arena in Calgary. He lost money on the tour. In fact, he's lost money on every tour he's ever been on. Not because of any problems with ticket sales, but because his shows are incredibly expensive to put on. A Gary Numan concert is an extravaganza, combining a spectacular light and laser show with mind-blowing sets and on-stage action. But why should he spend millions touring? Answer, because this is one musician who truly appreciates his fans.
If you can listen to the songs, it's every bit as good as a record and more powerful, so it's even better, which it is. And then you've also got a quarter of £1 million worth of lights and displays to look at. I mean, the evening's got to have so much more for you than just going and watching three blokes on a stage with no lights.
Gary's fans appreciate him as well, possibly more so than any other artist in the world. What they lack in number, they make up for in sheer determination. Numan's fans, who call themselves Numanoids, are a small but loyal bunch who keep in contact via the Gary Numan fan club as well as on computer networks such as the internet. The Numanoid phenomenon is more incredible when you consider the rough ride that Numan has been given by the music industry, and especially by music critics. His first hit single, Cars, hit the top of the charts without the blessing of England's music critics. In the British music industry, this is the same as horning in on Al Capone's Chicago turf. It just isn't done, and if you do it, they'll never forgive you for it. Gary did it, and he paid a heavy price. He escalated the war in 1980 when he recorded several songs on his album Telecon that criticized what he believed was the incestuous nature of the music industry. The result is that when Numan releases new material, it rarely gets mentioned or played. One single that he released in 1984, a song called Berserker, reached number 8 on the British charts despite getting only 5 plays on BBC One. He then decided to form his own record company, Numa Records, to produce and distribute both his own music as well as other up-and-coming artists who just can't get a break anywhere else. Gary feels it's a vicious circle. The same music critics who've managed to convince the world that Gary Numan never existed are even today criticizing him for his lack of chart success. Gary is philosophical about the whole situation. To him, selling only 500,000 copies of a record means that he's made 500,000 people happy. And if you can make 500,000 people happy, then you've done something right. As for his critics...
I don't give a f*** really, I just write songs, you know. If they sell, then they sell, and if they don't, then they don't. In my game, every single's got to be in the top 10 or else you're a failure. You know, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
Gary is also frequently accused of being cold, emotionless, and ruthless. Such is his onstage persona. But is he really like that?
Most people that say that are people that have never met me, so they're talking out their a*****s, like most of them do. It's easy to form an opinion on somebody's image, but that's like saying Sean Connery is really a secret agent. He's an actor. And that's all we are. So that we sing, we don't talk when we act. It's the same difference. We create images. That doesn't mean to say that when we walk off stage, we walk around like a zombie, all these white faces, and believing in machines are going to take over the world, because we don't. It's generally a story.
Although Gary's zealous fans are quick to dismiss the critics, he does feel that he's not being given enough credit for his ongoing contribution to the music scene.
Well, really funny, after all these things, everyone always says 2 years later that it's new then, and no one ever says I did it, either, ever. It's not like they say, oh yeah, but at least Newman did that 2 years ago, and maybe wasn't such a wanker after all. No one's ever said that, you know, they just forget.
So if Gary Numan really is being targeted by music critics in the music industry, if he's really been swept under the carpet, then why do his fans remain so loyal? To answer that, one has to look at the man's music. If one were to choose just one word to describe Gary's work, it would be experimental. This is an artist who doesn't feel confined to a particular sound or a particular style. He's done jazz, funk, rock, punk, fusions of several styles, and a myriad of styles that have no other name than Numan. He simply tries something to see if it works. Whether it works or not, he then moves on to something else. He long ago stopped looking for chart success and now concentrates on music that just feels right to him. But there is a common thread through most of his songs. This material transcends the usual confines of what we call music and goes directly for your emotions. He often goes in for ethereal, haunting melodies, which can be either light or dark or any shade in between. He stays away from the catchy Baby I Love You type of songs and writes music that explores every facet of the human condition. He's been called the Mozart of the 20th century, which is high praise indeed for someone that most people outside of the music industry have never even heard of. In 1986, he released what many fans consider his crowning achievement, an album called Strange Charm. An appropriate title, because no matter what you may think of Gary Numan, he does have a certain strange charm. Not a very commercial album by any stretch of the imagination, but it did yield one top 10 single for him, a song called My Breathing.
Thank you.
In just a minute, we'll explore why Gary Numan prefers flying to singing. You're listening to Music Magazine. On today's show, we've been looking at a singer-songwriter who prefers flying to singing. Gary Numan is a very introspective and shy person. His hit song, Car, speaks of his preference to view the world from inside his car, where he can see and experience everything, but nothing can touch him. He's an observer, but not a participant. Gary grew up in London, England, in a poor neighborhood near the end of one of the runways of Heathrow Airport. As you might expect, he developed a fascination for airplanes, and he never outgrew it. Today, he is one of the star attractions at air shows throughout Great Britain, sometimes flying his own stunt aircraft and sometimes wing-walking with other pilots. Flying allows Gary to be free of all earthbound concerns. The record industry, personal relationships, the state of the world today. To him, music is just another emotional outlet, a satisfying hobby rather than a career. And sometimes the two passions are connected. On one album, Gary wrote a very powerful song about flying an airplane which has just lost all power, and all he can do is wait for the big noise.
I've always been aware that they can go wrong. Some people have this blind faith in machines working forever. Now they think if they turn the television on, it's always going to work, and it don't. No wonder you turn it on and it goes pop. That's it, same with an airplane. No wonder you take off and it goes bang, and it catches fire, and something goes wrong. Then I'm very aware that that can happen.
So while he's on the ground, he's thinking about life, about the things that can happen and how we should live our lives knowing that it could all end at any time, and that we should cherish every moment we have. Gary Numan doesn't consider himself much of a musician. He plays keyboards and guitars on most of his albums, but he feels that his talents lay in songwriting rather than in playing the songs. In fact, he thinks of himself as a sort of jack-of-all-trades when it comes to playing. He can play just good enough to show another musician what it is he's got in mind, and they take it from there.
I tend to think it's a good thing, because you don't get trapped into writing songs to show off your expertise as a musician. You write songs for the sake of what the notes sound like.
It's this commitment to producing the best possible music that he can, regardless of whether or not radio stations will play it, or critics will like it, that inspires both Numanoids and fellow musicians. But just because he writes music more for himself than anyone else, doesn't mean he doesn't mind cutting loose from time to time, as he shows here with New Anger.
I'll have your neighbors, I'll have your piss. They say that I'm all over. Well, I don't know. They're not the fools that try, as they try. Again, what the fashion isn't good. I need some convincing. Well, if you've got. Seen it before, so try it again.
Gary Numan's star seems to be rising once again after 15 years of relative obscurity. Whether he finally gets back onto North American charts remains to be seen, but he likely won't care. Despite his so-called lack of chart success, Gary Numan is the 18th most successful singles artist in the history of British pop music. His 20 albums, which include live performances and one box set, also rank him amongst the top 30 all-time album artists. With over 10 million record sales worldwide and numerous record industry awards, Gary Numan has outsold and outlasted most of his so-called peers. His place and his influence in the history of rock and roll are undeniable and can never be taken away from him. So take a chance on something a little different. Head down to your local record store and pick up a copy of The Best of Gary Numan. He's got a lot of happy fans. Maybe you'll join them. For Music Magazine, I'm Joey James. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Music Magazine, a program of unusual and provocative music and information presented to challenge and entertain. Join us again when we present another program of different music on Music Magazine.